everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, raring to go here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Happy Canada Day. July 1, Tom. It's 2020. This is the Canadian Independence Day.
Independence from the mother country?
Maybe Independence Day isn't the right way to phrase
They were granted autonomy by
Dominion
Britain?
Dominion status or something?
Something like that.
But it's Canada Day. We'll leave it like that. Tom, yesterday was supposed to be a very productive rain day here in the Tucson area. Didn't work that way up at our place. Couple of rain showers, barely enough to kind of wet the pavement. So very disappointing so far.
I see a pattern, and it seems
I don't like it.
It seems to be that we're only going to get afternoon and evening shower possibilities.
Yeah.
So I guess it has something to do with the heat of the day and how much moisture is in the upper atmosphere and that kind of stuff.
And how much cloud cover there is. But anyway, let's hope the next few days will finally bring a very good, productive summer rain to the Tucson area. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line for his monthly visit to this program. Tucson City Councilman, Democrat representing Ward Number 6, Steve Kasachek. Steve, how are you?
I'd be happy with some rain, not just productive, but some, a drop.
Yeah, it's bad news.
Pretty sad. I'm kind of looking outside now, and it looks pretty blue sky.
Oh, yeah, a lot of blue sky. Maybe we'll get some afternoon buildup. Steve, there was an important meeting that you hosted last night concerning this whole issue over the water treatment situation and water that cannot be served to the public from that treatment facility. Will the facility, though, be closed?
Yes, I am so glad that you're opening with this, because there is, in my opinion, not a single more important issue region-wide that we ought to be confronting. And what you're talking about is the contamination from perfluorinated compounds, PFAS, in the water system. So the first thing to say is that we are not serving contaminated water to customers. The city of Tucson serves CAP water, Colorado River water. The water that is being contaminated is our groundwater, not the CAP water. But that's a big deal, because everybody knows we're in a drought. In fact, we were just talking about the lack of rain.
Right.
We're in a 10-year drought, 12-year drought, and the supply of CAP water that we get is going to be reduced, and it's going to be reduced in the next year or so. Tucson is not the first in line to have reductions. That'll be agriculture first, but to the extent that we have a groundwater supply that we are going to have to rely on sooner than later, we have to make sure it's clean. So we have a treatment facility out by the Air National Guard operation that was not built for PFAS. It was built for TCE and another contaminant called 1,4-dioxane. And the treatment plant is successfully taking those pollutants out of the water before that water is served to the public. By chance, it's called the TARP plant, Tucson Airport Remediation Project. The TARP plant has what are called carbon filters in. It's just part of the system. And the carbon filters, by chance, clean PFAS out as well. We were working along just fine with that as the PFAS levels were sort of at a moderate stage. But recently we learned that as a result of Air National Guard operations, the PFAS levels have exploded out around the TARP plant.
Wow.
To give you a sense of scale, the EPA has a health standard of 70 parts per trillion for PFAS. We're seeing levels out by the TIA right now of over 13,000 parts per trillion.
Are you kidding me? That high? Oh, my goodness.
And out by Davis-Monthan, they're over 1,100 parts per trillion. So we're talking about magnitudes of scale difference between what the EPA calls for and what we're seeing. So we were concerned, legitimately, that the carbon filters would be simply overwhelmed by these levels of PFAS, and we would not be able to assure people that we were not sending them contaminated water, and so we're shutting the plant down. That's not a long-term solution, obviously, because the plant is necessary to control the plume. We have to be pumping the groundwater, cleaning it up, and making sure that the plume doesn't expand and migrate. So we got some assistance from the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality to build a temporary pipeline so that we can keep the plant operating, but pipe this water over to the Santa Cruz and let it naturally recharge. Again, not a long-term solution. The Davis-Monthan plume is immediately southeast of our central well field, and that central well field is important for serving water to the entire region. And so we're working with ADEQ over there. They put about $3 million into building a pilot plant. They expect that pilot plant to be up and running about December of next year, which is, again, too long from my perspective. But we don't have the Department of Defense. We do not have the Air National Guard stepping up to the plate and writing us the checks that we need to build these plants. One of the purposes of the meeting last night was to, again, inform the public as to what, you know, what the situation is. But the other purpose was to get the DOD on the line, and they were part of the meeting, to get the Air National Guard in the meeting, and the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, and let them know that this slow walk that we're seeing, this kind of moving at the pace of government, is completely unacceptable, especially in light of the fact that we're in a drought situation, and we're going to have to rely on our groundwater at some point. And when we do, we're going to have to assure the people that it's clean. When I confronted the DOD people last night about their projection for finishing their studies, and they're looking at 2024.
What?
To finish their studies. Yeah,
what?
3 years down the road.
This is totally unacceptable. Yeah. This is...
Yeah. So when I said to them, what are your plans to mitigate this situation if you're still studying this? And they said, well, we'll make sure that we all have alternate water sources. And by that, they meant bottled water.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm...
Bottled water.
Yeah, so completely nonplussed. This is something, as I said at the beginning, there is not a single more important issue for us as a region to be confronting the federal government, the Air National Guard, the Department of Defense, because it is without question that they are the cause of the pollution, and they need to be building these plants right now, the treatment plants. And the $3 million that I mentioned that the ADEQ is putting into it,
mm-hmm.
that is not a tenth of what it's going to be. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars to build these treatment plants and get this under control. Now, I was in touch with Senator Kelly a few weeks ago. He testified in front of a committee, and there are two ways that they're trying to tackle this at the federal level. One is through the Defense Authorization Act, to put some PFAS remediation money in that, and also in the infrastructure bill that they're still negotiating at the federal level. But we haven't got the time to work at the DOD's pace on this thing, and... So no, I'm absolutely tickled pink that you brought this up first, because it's the most important issue that we've got going on regionally right now.
Let me ask you before we take the break: why did these PFAS? Why did that rate suddenly skyrocket? Whose fault was that?
There are different theories behind that, but one of them is that the plume out by ANG and Tucson International is. It's a very slow-moving contaminant, and we just began the testing fairly recently, and we're now seeing that the plume is migrating. And so all I can tell you is that the most recent testing has shown that the levels have skyrocketed, and they're at levels that would indicate you can't even treat for it.
Wow.
And so it's insane. And it was so frustrating on the call last night to hear. I mean, God bless them for participating in the call. And we had about 100 people on the call, so people are concerned about this. But they're simply reading their script. And as soon as you ask them to go off script, such as when I asked the guy from the DOD, what are your plans for getting your checkbook out and making the city of Tucson whole for this proactively? He said, I'll have to run the answer up the chain of command.
Yeah, and you kind of got the feeling. I wasn't at the meeting, didn't hear it, but you probably got the feeling that they kind of felt they had to take part in this meeting yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It was a completely bad look. I know that they know that they're the source of the contaminants. They're the source of these contaminants at every military base around the nation. And when I say this is a tens of millions of dollars issue for the city of Tucson, it's a tens of billions of dollars issue nationwide. And that's the reason this has escalated up to the federal level and federal legislation.
Let's take the break right here, but talk about horrible timing for the city of Tucson. Some say this drought is now in its actually 20th year, so it's ongoing. Let's take a break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios and our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved Regional Transportation Plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Tomorrow, the chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission, very important and timely interview with Leah Marquez Peterson, will be with us. The situation with rolling power outages over in California and other places, we'll see. Hopefully, that won't be happening in Tucson this summer. Steve Kasachek with us on the live line. Steve, I had an outstanding and made a run up to Mona's today and brought me a beautiful almond croissant. I said I was only going to eat half of it. No. It's gone.
No.
Gone.
You don't eat half of anything that comes out of that place. No, that's not humanly possible. Like the old ad, bet you can't eat just one, was that Lay's potato chips?
Yes.
You're not even eating half a Kringle, Buckmaster. I know better than that.
I know. There you go.
Those things are bigger than your face.
Yep.
Hey, you're having Leah Marquez on Peterson on tomorrow. There's
yep.
a big deal going on in Tucson that's going to wind up in front of the Corporation Commission.
Talk to me.
TEP is talking about a transmission line extension. They're upgrading their service from 46 kVA to 138 or something like that. The difference is that the size of the poles are massive. They've got these wooden, 50-foot tall transmission lines, and they're talking about these big 115-foot tall metal poles that you can't put your arms around, and they want to run them right up Campbell, right up the Keno, Gateway Corridor. From 22nd Street, or actually from 36th Street, all the way down past the university to the U of A Hospital, Banner Hospital. And there's a big, big outcry right now about if you're going to do that, you need to put them underground. And so the TEP is filing for an alignment that they are going to be presenting to the Corporation Commission later this year to approve that alignment. And it's a big deal that Leah needs to do her homework on, because if they approve that alignment, it's going to simply shift a very significant fight back into the city about whether or not those things are going above or below ground. And so it's a hot topic here locally. I know I was just in a conversation earlier this morning with the mayor's office about do we set up a taxing district or what do we have? Well, how do we do that? TEP is first of all, you're talking about power outages, and so from that standpoint, the product and the concept is absolutely legitimate. But putting these massive transmission line poles right down Campbell Avenue,
oh my goodness,
is just not a good look.
Well, I'm sure glad you brought that up. It's the first I've heard about it. It sounds like these are the giant sequoias of the utility business right down Campbell. Can you imagine the disruption that will cause?
Yeah, it's going to they're massive. That's a good analogy. I have to steal that from you sometime.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can drive a car through them like a sequoia, but they are certainly massive.
Wow.
And they are certainly out of place, especially running through residential areas and by the U of A. So.
Well,
it's a big deal coming.
I've been looking at these daily numbers on the COVID. They're not moving much. They're 50 to 100 cases still every day in Pima County. And U of A's coming back, and there's no mandatory situation for the students, returning students, to have shots. I'm telling you, we've got about half of the population in Pima County, maybe it's more, a little bit more, saying they don't want shots.
Yeah. Well, we can thank both the governor and I will say Bobby Robbins, the president of the U of A, was not at all aggressive in mandating vaccinations. The when Governor Ducey issued his most recent executive order prohibiting mandatory vaccinations, the U of A was one of two schools in the Pac-12 who had not done that. The other one was up the road at ASU. So for some reason, the U of A and Bobby Robbins came into this community touting a big medical background and that. They totally dropped the ball on the testing on the off-campus students, and we were the hot spot in the region when the students came back to campus last September. And as you're right, we're a little bit over 50% May not even be that, though, now that I'm thinking about it, for fully vaccination in Pima County. And for now for the U of A and the state, well, the U of A is the state, to say that we're not going to require vaccinations, I think it's a completely irresponsible move, especially considering that we've got this Delta variant that has emerged in the state of Arizona and in Pima County. It is far more transmissible. And everything that I read says it's the impacts are significantly more severe than your garden variety COVID-19. And we saw the impact that that had with over 2,500 fatalities in Pima County alone in the last year. So, no, I think it's a horrible decision. I don't know what Ducey's thinking in terms of why this would be beneficial from a political move standpoint. But science needs to trump politics. And I'm astounded that Bobby Robbins and Richard Carmona, who were leading that team, were not more aggressive and out in front of the Pac-12, much less not even getting engaged, and saying we are going to require vaccinations for every person matriculating or working on this campus come fall.
And if they really were aggressive about it, and even if the governor said no, there could have been legal action and everything else to take this to a next level.
Yeah, and in fact, they sat back, and no exaggeration, the U of A and ASU, the only two schools in the conference, and right now there are over 500 colleges and universities nationwide who are requiring vaccinations, full vaccinations, before students come back in the fall. Over 500, and that's not private universities, that's public institutions. And so for the U of A to be the outlier and sort of waiting on Ducey to bail them out, and that's in fact what happened, I think it's unconscionable. I think it's totally irresponsible.
I do have the number. It's about 53% of Pima County's population that's eligible for vaccines have been fully vaccinated. So there you go. That's about half.
Okay. Yeah. That leaves about half, doesn't
it? Yeah, leaves about half. And I tell you, you know, we're going to have the flu season's going to be coming up as school starts up in the fall, and no one will be wearing masks, and I don't know. It just seems like we're setting this thing up for a big mess when we could have been really putting this thing to bed, this COVID-19 to bed, and not worrying about it, but now it still is a concern. Before we wrap, go ahead.
The Delta variant is exploding. The Delta variant is exploding in nations around the world, and nations that thought they had passed it. You know, we're seeing it in Australia. Well, I can go through all the countries, but we're seeing it, and it's in Tucson, Pima County. And for half of our population to be unvaccinated, we're sitting duck.
We had Mike Ortega with us for our Friday Focus interview last week. He went over the budget, the new budget for the city. He also talked about the water, Tucson water increase that's supposed to start at the end of the year. I'm hearing Pima County's coming after the council and the city all over this thing on this water increase with legal action.
Well, what they've done most recently, and I'm totally supportive, is Chuck Huckleberry sent Mike Ortega a letter saying, we understand you're doing a cost of service analysis, which I think is absolutely necessary and justified to do the cost of service. If there's going to be a differential rate increase, we ought to be in a position of demonstrating to the people that are going to be paying it that this is at least one of the factors, and cost of service is a piece of that conversation. The county has asked to be a part of doing that analysis, and I welcome them to the table. Everything that we do on this should be above board, totally transparent, and it's as close as being represented at the table as unincorporated Pima County residents will be to allow the county to participate in doing the COS, the cost of service. So that letter came out, I think it was late last week. I don't know that Ortega has answered it yet, but I have already let Mike know that I'd be totally supportive of Huckleberry and the county water folks participating in that study.
Overall, how did Mike do with this budget?
Oh, good. We quite frankly had we got helped significantly by the federal dollars that helped us through COVID. not just the city, but small businesses and residents and all that. But those were one-time dollars. And so we are structurally balanced right now going forward. Hopefully we don't get a rebound on this COVID thing and we're back at square one. But I think we're on a good trajectory right now from a local economy standpoint. And Mike Ortega and his team have done a really good job in helping us navigate this.
All right, Steve Kasacek, we will let you go. We will talk to you again in August. Any plans to stay cool here in July?
Yeah, just stand out inside and hope it rains and get cooled off, you know, but oh my God, you know, and good luck in the second half of your hour with the sugar rebound you're going to have after scarfing down that.
Oh, it was so good. So fresh. All their pastries are wonderful up at Mona's. All right, Steve Kasacek, we will let you go. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasacek, Ward 2 Democrat on the Tucson City Council. And again, tomorrow, Leah Marquez-Peterson, the ACC chair. And I'm so glad the councilman brought this thing up. It's the first I'd heard about it. The TEP and their upgrade plans, planning massive above ground, well, they would be poles, above ground poles, up Campbell Avenue. We'll have to ask Leah, do your homework on this one, because this is coming before the ACC. Take a break right here. Dr. David Levy is next. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. If you go by Green Things at 3384 East River Road and you roll down your window, you will hear 13 acres worth of Green Things plants saying, "Where's the rain? Please, rain, water us. We need the rain." I mean, not that they aren't getting, the plants are getting, they're getting great water over at Green Things, but there's nothing like nature's moisture to really green things up. GreenThingsAC.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites we are in. The Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on KVOI. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. David Levy, who is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine. He's now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. He is also one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, discovering 23 comets, including a co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter back in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. Dr. Levy, I presume, how are you, sir?
Well, hi, Bill. I'm doing fine, and welcome back. I'm glad that your arm is starting to heal.
Yeah.
And that you're doing well.
Well, yes. Let's see. This is 6.5 weeks since the accident, and I'll tell you, the first couple of weeks were horrible. I had a horrible attitude, so much so I did not want to even come in and be on the radio, but I've been on the radio back about 4 weeks, and every day my attitude increasingly is getting better, and I think the physical therapy has really helped. 3 weeks into it, and I'm doing my protocols at home. Did all three of them this morning successfully. So I am on the mend, Dr. David Levy.
I am very glad to hear that, and I know Wendy's glad to hear it as well.
You had a broken something or other early on in your life, didn't you?
Well, your broken arm reminded me of a broken arm that I had. On the 21st of June, 1960, I was 12 years old. I was riding my bicycle to Roslyn School, and I made a left turn on a traffic light onto a busy boulevard. The front wheel of the bicycle collided with the curb, and the bicycle stopped. I, however, did not. I sailed over the bicycle, landing on the curb and breaking my arm.
Oh, boy.
While I was in the hospital, my cousin gave me a book. It's called Our Sun and the Worlds Around It. And Bill, that book is what really set me off to be an astronomer in my entire life.
Wow. So a broken arm led to really you getting full bore into astronomy.
Yes, it did. It set the stage for the rest of my life, I'm afraid.
Wow. David, I know you've been working tirelessly with the new observatory. It's a rebuild. How is it coming? Is it now up and running there in Vail, Arizona?
It is running. I hope maybe you may want to come down and take a look sometime.
Sure.
The roof opens and it closes. And the roof has a mind of its own. In fact, I was taking a picture with the roof open and my telescopes all pointing up at the sky. And then I decided to close the roof, forgetting to put the telescopes down.
Uh-oh.
And the roof had no problem knocking one of the telescopes completely over.
Uh-oh.
But I was able to contact my neighbor, who's the strongest person I know. And he came in and 1, 2, 3, and the telescope was back up and running.
Oh, I had this.
It took about a minute.
I had an image of the roof closing on with the telescope, crushing it, you know, in the middle there. So Luckily, that didn't happen.
Well, I was in the building, but the telescope did not hit me much.
Uh-huh.
So I was fine.
There was a, I guess you would call it a pretty darn big comet. Big comets out there, but we're not going to see it.
I'd say we're probably not going to see it. It's probably the largest comet ever spotted, much bigger than Hale-Bopp, except that it isn't going to get closer to us than about the orbit of Saturn.
Really?
So we'll be able to see it on pictures, but it won't be something you'll be able to see with a telescope, I'm afraid. However, I am writing a new book, although this is not much about comets. Comets have quite a bit to do with it. It is a book for children, and I am desperately looking for a publisher for it.
Okay.
It's about a magic beagle and a magic telescope.
Oh.
It takes a group of kids across the sky.
Oh, sounds like it's a very interesting perspective. I would think a publisher would be very interested. Once you get out there and start pushing it, probably you'll get one, and I hope you do. David, quick question for you. You know, you talk about a giant, big comet. Kind of a trivia question for you, and I think Tom Fairbanks would be interested in hearing about this, too. What is considered the most visible comet that we've ever seen in our skies?
That I've ever seen?
Anybody's ever seen.
I would guess that the comet of 1577, Tycho Brahe's comet, is probably the biggest.
Hmm.
The biggest that I've ever seen was Comet Yakutake. It wasn't that big a comet, but it came so close to the Earth that it literally covered the sky in 1996.
Really? 56.
And, 1996.
Oh,
96. Before Wendy and I were married.
Oh, 96. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I actually saw a picture that you took of that. That one. It was pretty darn bright. It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month. Dr. Levy, it's all yours.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. This quote is from President Kennedy. And he said these words at the American University on June the 10th, 1963. And as you listen to them, you'll be able to tell how much the Cuban Missile Crisis, which had happened just a few months before, had affected him. But this is what he said. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures, and we are all mortal.
Mm.
And I don't think anybody has ever forgotten that, considering
what happened
to Kennedy just a few months after that.
Yeah, I remember that quote very much, a very famous quote. Thank you very much for sharing it with
us. Thanks, Bill.
All right, Dr. David Levy, we will let you go, and thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, we'll speak with you next month.
All right, we've already got our date set for you next month, and have a great day. Dr. David Levy with us.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you, I will sure try. On the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition, coming up next, Attorney Don Luce is with us on the live line. Be right back.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care. specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I love New Mexico. I mean, I love Arizona, too, but I also love New Mexico, the land of enchantment. And 3-hour road trip puts you in the vicinity of Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, and the Buckmaster Show. Guarantee it will be cooler. Over in Silver City, I usually say about 10 to 15 degrees cooler, 78 degrees midday in Silver City at that 5,500-foot elevation. Look at these high temperatures, right around 80 degrees, overnight lows around 60. Want to cool off? And they, unlike Tucson, have had a ton of rain in New Mexico over the last 3 or 4 days. So not only are you going to get cooler weather, but you're going to get some beautiful greened up conditions in the Gila National Wilderness. SouthwestNewMexico.org is your starting place to find out more about your trip over to Silver City. Let's welcome now Attorney Don Luce. He is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. He is the contributor, not only legal contributor to our show, but the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books in their second printing. Let's go now on the live line to the vicinity of Traverse City, Michigan, a beautiful area. I love it over there. Growing up in Chicago, it was always a pleasure to cross the lake to Traverse City. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you?
Doing pretty darn good. Been following you on Facebook. You were out on Lake Michigan a couple of days ago. How's the trip going up there in Michigan?
Fantastic, Bill. I'm looking right now across the water at Mackinac Island.
Oh.
I see the Grand Hotel,
oh.
And my readout says 68 degrees.
Oh. Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
Yeah, yep. Very nice. Beautiful summer up in Michigan. Morgan Stanley told employees, Don Luce, these are employees who work at the Manhattan headquarters, they have to be vaccinated against COVID-19 before they can return to the office. The bank also said in a memo to New York employees that staff working in buildings with a large employee presence must confirm their vaccination status by early July. Don, can an employer, and I know we've talked about this over the past couple of months, but I want to get an update on this. Now, can an employer mandate a vaccination before returning to work?
Well, generally speaking, the answer is yes. Now, you have to say a little more about what kind of employer. So if the employer has unionized employees, then it may be subject to a collective bargaining agreement, and there may be some issues with regard to the unionization. The employer may have to negotiate that issue with the union. If there is no union, and if the employer has less than 15 employees and is an Arizona-based employer, there's just an employer doing business in Arizona, it's not subject to federal law that governs religious beliefs, disabilities, and those types of issues. If you have 15 or more employees, then you have issues to do with, you know, if somebody has, for instance, a medical disability, you would have to provide a medical exemption for that person. And likewise, if someone had a sincerely held religious belief, you would have to provide an exception. So 15 or more employees, the employer is subject to Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and also the Americans with Disabilities Act. Less than 15, those federal laws do not apply, and there is no Arizona equivalency. So under Arizona state law, there is no requirement that you provide an exception to those with sincerely held religious beliefs or that you give a medical exemption to those with disabilities. Now, as a practical matter, should an employer do that? Probably, most likely, definitely yes. Legally, is an employer required to do that? No. So it's going to vary depending on the location of the employer, whether in Arizona or outside of Arizona, the size of the employer, whether 15 or more employees or less than that, and the type of employment relationship that it has with its employees. If there is a collective bargaining agreement in place, then the employer may find itself dealing with the union with regards to these types of issues. But generally speaking, an employer can require that its employees be vaccinated before returning to the workplace. As a general rule, that's yes.
When I brought this up to you several months ago, this was kind of really evolving. I think we were kind of ahead of the curve when I brought this up several months ago with you. But now, as Aaron McLaughlin, who's a labor and employment attorney at Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, is quoted by CNN as saying, we are seeing tons of major corporations now writing up policies concerning this, Don Luce, about who have been fully vaccinated and the policies for employees who have not. So now the big business is really into this full bore.
Well, yes, and there are a couple of points that I'd like to make with regard to what's happened in the last several months. Number one, vaccinations have become, you know, fairly widespread throughout the country. They are being administered under an emergency use authorization from the FDA. So they have been found effective and safe, at least as concerns the research that's in to date. But they have the blessing of the FDA, and that's important because the employers, if requiring their employees to be vaccinated, sort of have the cover of the protection of the FDA emergency use authorization. Secondly, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which governs employer-employee relationships, about a month ago came out and said, it is not improper for an employer to require its employees to be vaccinated. In other words, that in and of itself doesn't violate federal law. Now, we had talked earlier about Title VII and also the ADA. Those are special categories. But generally speaking, the EEOC is not going to have a problem with an employer who requires its employees to be vaccinated as a condition of continued employment. And so that's been a major change, and that's why we're seeing major corporations now coming out with these policies that, well, you may have to provide proof of vaccination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the employer may be able to say, you haven't been vaccinated, and before you come back to the office, you have to be vaccinated. And generally speaking, the employee is not going to be in a position to say, no, I refuse to be vaccinated, generally speaking. So those changes have just taken place, especially with regard to the EEOC mandate or directive that came out about a month ago.
When asking about vaccination status, attorneys are being advised, or they are advising employers to limit the inquiry, especially if the answer is no on the part coming back from an employee. Your thoughts on that?
That is a very good point. And the reason you stop at no is because the next step may reveal medical information about the employee that the employer is not entitled to. So if you're asking the why question,
mm-hmm.
I say you're asking for trouble. I would say, If you're going to make inquiries about vaccination status, and I think that's fair game, then you limit your inquiry and you stop at no. You know, you don't ask the why question. So very important point, because not only is the information itself protected, but merely asking the question in some cases can be problematic on part of the employer. So the employer should not be asking employees why they're not vaccinated.
And it will vary from state to state, I imagine, correct? Or no?
Correct. It does. And the reason is because federal law does not apply to any employer with less than 15 employees. And so then you would default to state law. And as I mentioned earlier, Arizona doesn't have a comparable statute to Title VII or to the ADA. Now, some states have laws that provide protections along those lines, but Arizona is not one of them. And so it goes by state law for the smaller employees with regard to smaller employers, and with regard to employers with 15 or more employees, then, of course, federal law applies, and we've already discussed that. Now, the interesting thing here, and I think you and I have discussed this before, every state, all 50 states, have some form of mandatory vaccination requirement for school children.
Yes.
Ages K through 12.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing is kind of a parallel requirement for COVID vaccinations, like you see for mumps and measles and smallpox and those kinds of diseases. And the people who are looking at this and saying, well, how come I have to get vaccinated? The analogy might be, well, why do school children need to be vaccinated?
Right.
Because that is a requirement, and nobody really seems to give much pushback on that.
All right, Don, I'm going to have to let you go. Enjoy the rest of your vacation up in Michigan. Attorney Don Luce.
Thanks,
with us.
Bill.
Thanks a lot. Don Luce, the author of Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books in their second printing. We thank Don for being with us every month. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, Bill Buckmaster wishing you a beautiful day.